L-E-T-E-N-P-C.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisisCLE.com/podcast.
All right, everyone. Welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm Davis Maddock, rejoined by my in-season cohort, Lord Rebar, Lord Reeves, Rich Rebar, the guy from Sharp Football Analysis. He's here. Haven't done a show in like 3 months now, and I figured it was an appropriate time to come and just kind of see where your brain's at with these prospects. We've had Corain on, had Gretch on, had Bimefor on. We've been making the rounds. So I thought it was about time.
I thought I was cut from the team. I didn't know if I was going to be able to make the cut in the off season, but I just missed talking with you, man. We podcast more than probably any duo in the history of people that don't do a show together. I miss just getting your thoughts on like this weird pop culture stuff and what's going on outside of football, but we'll always like to riff on some rookies, man.
Yeah. I'm now at the point. So we've done one rookie draft that we're in together. We do it for Scott Barrett's Dynasty League. It's the only one that I'm in that does the draft. And I'm excited about 9 guys. And then everyone else, I could basically be told from 110 to 305 that there are 5 fantasy football starters, 1 fantasy football starter. Like I just think that and my top 9 would be Willis, Breece Hall, Kenneth Walker, Garrett Wilson, Drake London, Jameson Williams, Treylon Burks, Chris Olave, and George Pickens. And then I think after those 9 guys, you could sell me in any order. You could tell me they win in any order in the NFL draft. You could tell me Sky Moore joins that group. You could tell me Christian Watson is a 4th-round pick or a 1st-round pick. You could tell me the Steelers trade up to take Kenny Pickett. Desmond Ridder is the 2nd quarterback. Like I could just be led in any direction.
Yeah, it's like that with the wide receivers too. I'm in the same boat. I think I feel really good about 6 guys. And then we can extend it to like 9 or 10 guys that I think I genuinely still really like. And then there are some just the guys that we have our favorite flavors that you pepper in. And you just hope like they land in a good spot and can take it with more draft capital than maybe is anticipated by the general public. But yeah, I think that the top 5 receivers I still feel really good about, even though no one is maybe on Jamar Chase's like blue chip type of level.
That's been my take this whole time is Burks, Drake London, whoever, you know, I don't really care where they go or whatever. I don't think anyone is, I don't even think anyone's on the CeeDee Lamb level. I think they're all one tier below that, even regardless of landing spot.
I think there's some upside for guys to be, you know, potential alphas, but I do kind of think that, yeah, like, you know, like a Garrett Wilson or Chris Olave are probably more on that, like, can have like a, can moonlight as a wide receiver 1, but probably are going to end up as fantasy wide receiver 2s at their apex. I know that will definitely bristle a few people, but that's kind of where I see. And then maybe London and Burks have lower floors than both those players, but at their apex, the seasons, the outcomes of their NFL careers in the multiverse that actually end up hitting are like gigantic. Like those are guys that can have multiple like 1,200, 15 plus touchdown seasons on their resume. And then you have Jameson Williams who could be kind of like a best of both worlds. And like, he's like the guy that from a real football stance also offers like tactical leverage that we don't get fantasy points for, but a team can utilize in their offense even when he's not getting the football. So I do feel really good about those 5 guys. I feel really good about Breece Hall. And then, like, I want to feel really good about the upside outcome from Malik Willis, and I want to feel really good about the upside outcome for Kenneth Walker in fantasy as well. And then, obviously, George Pickens, because I'm on the same boat as you.
Because he's a dog, baby. Yeah. He's a dog.
There's also, like, kind of, like, a gray area there, too. But those are the guys that I'm with you. Like, all that group of guys, and we kind of have, like, our favorite flavors as we move on.
So what do you make – what is the Lord Reeves brand to take on Jameson Williams being a transfer because he couldn't get on the field with, you know, all the insane – you know, Olave mm-hmm. and Wilson and Smith and Igba and everyone at Ohio State?
Yeah, I mean, it is tricky to kind of navigate, right, like to factor it in. But I think when you look at what, like, NFL teams value and, like, what he offers in terms of, like, being able to be more of, like, a really good version of like what Will Fuller was his last year that we saw him play real football, like with Deshaun Watson, where he's a guy that like at his worst can just be like I said, just provide like a tactical leverage. Like he can run downfield and draw defenses that way. And you have to play a safety over the top of them. But then also I believe there's a lot more nuance to his game that doesn't get credit for. And he can run a lot of the route tree that he necessarily wasn't asked to run in Alabama, but can, and he can be like an 80 plus catch guy too at the next level. But yeah, when you have guys like Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave, who he was on the team with, and they don't have ACL injuries either, right?
Yeah,
like that's the other thing. You know, it's kind of like something you have to kind of weigh into things. But I do think what the NFL does value serves Jameson Williams really well in terms of draft capital. I think we're seeing that as a guy that already has a torn ACL still being kind of steamed up throughout the process. I mean, if he would have ran, I think that he would have had a good shot to for sure be the consensus wide receiver one in terms of draft capital. And then even with the injury, you're still seeing that teams are still valuing him really heavily.
And we're hearing, I never remember. I'm the worst on shows. I never remember who tweets whatever, but I did see that someone was putting their name on a report that Jameson Williams might be the number one wide receiver anyways, that ACL, no ACL, you know, whatever, just that teams are super in to what Jameson Williams offers. Cause I do think teams have really learned that even if average depth of target across the league is going down, just having that guy who can make plays 30 yards down the field and beat the safeties and the safeties have to come out of the box for, I mean, all the fucking too high safety shit we saw last year, like having a guy who can break that look is super important right now.
Yeah, I mean, you look at him last year, he led all of college football in yardage on targets, you know, 30 yards or further downfield. His yards per out run, and the great is, like, his teammate adjusted stuff is still even really good. Like, his yards per team pass attempt are phenomenal, even much higher than both, like, Wilson and Olave, who played together. You know, obviously, Mechie's not as good as either of those two players, but, I mean, those are things that stand out. You know, the thing with him, with Williams is, you know, he is like kind of that archetype. Like he's a little bit smaller, like 180 pounds, like, you know, that Deshaun Jackson kind of mold. He's a little bit taller than him. But I do think that he does offer a lot more of that like nuance. And we're seeing like that's, I did a show with Kevin Cole and he kind of highlighted that how much the NFL is starting to value like that archetype wide receiver. And then the guys like Treylon Burks are sliding down, but
yep.
But the thing is, like, you're finding a lot more hits in those guys that the NFL is letting slide down than they are in those first-round wide receivers that are more of, like, those fringe archetype guys that have kind of been really kind of pushed up into the forefront of the NFL, the you know, the 5'10 to 195-pound guys.
Yeah, 5'10, 195 is what the ideal NFL wide receiver looks like now, which is an insane sentence I never thought I'd say.
Well, yeah, you know, they want – it's a speed and space game now, and they want versatility. You need to play multiple positions. Which I think what really helps the two big wide receivers in this class out really well is that they're not like the throwback roto-viz big wide receivers, like push this dude as a boundary X, let him make 50-50 balls. I mean, you look at Treylon Burks and Drake London's like production profiles, like, well, Burks was a guy that was like used near the line of scrimmage a ton, used in the slot a ton. Arkansas was just trash. They had to get him the football as much as possible, especially this year after losing a dynamic quarterback such as Felipe Franks.
Right.
And then London was a guy in the same boat, like where with that offense, like they used him near the line of scrimmage targets, relied on his ability after the catch. He can play some big slot. And I think that really helps both of these guys in terms of what the NFL has kind of moved away from, just because from an archetype stance, like those guys are doing those things on the football field. Whereas in the past, like that wasn't always the case. Like when DK was coming out and was the NFL punished him for only doing a couple things well, You know, it wasn't so much what they were looking for. Even what he did well, the NFL used a lot, like hitches, slants, like go routes, things like that. But AJ Brown's the one I always circle back to, is like, I don't understand how the league let him fall so far, because he was a guy at Ole Miss that played a lot of like big slot and was used that way in terms of versatility, and he still fell. So I don't really even know like what the story was there, but I do think it helps London and Burks a lot that they were used in a fashion like you would see, not guys that are built like they are used at the
college. Like an NFL wide receiver, like like a Cooper Kupp, like a Michael Thomas, even, because like Michael Thomas is not like a small guy, you know, but he's used in that role. I came into the process extremely excited about Burks, but I do get the vibe that nerds are higher on Burks than the NFL is on Burks. For, you know, it seems like the NFL likes the Ohio State guys more. And I am getting like the Drake London stuff is just kind of hard for me to process, because he is, you know, he would have been my number one wide receiver in the class by a country mile. 5 years ago, you know, like I would have been, I would have been all in on that guy. And it's nothing to do with him, but I, you know, the last time I went all in on a massive boundary Pac-12 wide receiver, it was Arcega Whiteside. And so I just am getting some of those, like, and they don't play anything alike. And the offenses were so different. You know, Stanford is that pro style run 60% of the time. That the USC offense that Drake London played in was spread offense, you know, with they would play four wide receivers a lot of the time and stuff, so it's totally different. The London is the one I'm having the hardest time with of these five guys.
Yeah, London I think is a little more interesting. I'm a little bit more one foot in both buckets with people. Like, the objective stuff's amazing. He's the second youngest wide receiver in this class. He has the size profile. He has that usage, like I said, you know, near the line of scrimmage. He's just got boatloads of production. I mean, you look at him last year, I mean, he was targeted on 41.6% of his routes. Like, that's insane. Like, just one of every two plays he was out running a route, he was getting a targeted, basically, which is absolutely just bonkers. So we always love those guys that command targets. And like, when you look at it from a fantasy stance, like when you're going down this class and you're asking yourself, like, well, who are the guys in this class that could have like those 15 touchdown seasons? Like, his name is immediately like one of the top guys on the list, if not the top guy. And from a fantasy stance, like, I'm always going to edge those guys out. So even though, like you, we've acquiesced along the way with the NFL and have found out, you know, to add more nuance and versatility, and we want a lot of targets first. But yeah, if you look at some of his projection, though, there is a lot more work. I'm not so much locked in on like the contested catch stuff as a negative, because even if you remove his contested catch stuff, his production is really high. I'm more worried about that, like, he doesn't have any signature stuff that like translates to the NFL. And I always bring up when talking about London, you know, Dwayne McFarland did an article early this offseason on Pro Football Focus, where he looked at the most targeted routes in the NFL and how each collegiate wide receiver in this class performed on those routes. And Drake London wasn't even in the top 10 in this draft class on any of the most peripheral primary routes in the NFL in terms of yards per route run. And to me, that's kind of like one of those things, like, it just adds to the projection, right?
Right.
Whereas Burks has a couple of those, like when you look at like, you know, slants and in breaking routes, like he's excellent on those types of things, because that's what he's going to be asked to do in the NFL. And then he has this like sidecar of the production stuff that London has as well. So although there is projection also with Burks like playing outside, there are things that like he clearly already demonstrated that he excelled at a collegiate level that he can take to the NFL that they use at the NFL level, where London is a lot more projection. He's got all this size, he got the targets, got the production profile, but he didn't really win a lot on the routes that were extremely used heavily in the NFL. And that's where I think the projection comes from him.
So who are the guys coming in that you're hoping to leave with the most, right? Cause you know, like you're going to have a smattering of draft picks, you know, from between 1 to 12 in the rookie drafts and stuff. I think, 7 is like the nut spot, because you're just going to be getting one of the guys you really like, right? Could be Jameson Williams, could be Olave, could be, I mean, 7 would be early-ish for Pickens, kind of depending on what the quarterbacks, like quarterback landing spot is going to be a big part of this. Like, we just did a rookie draft where all the non Malik Willis quarterbacks went in the second round. So Pickett,
which Howell, won't happen after the draft.
No, it will not. And it'll depend on who goes in the first round, right? Ritter could go to the Steelers or whatever and go way up. You know, just, they're like, we're talking about multiverse possibilities here. Like, it could just go anyway. But who are you hoping to grab?
Yeah, of the top two guys of the top tier, like the group we talked about. I mean, obviously, I'm not going to get Breece Hall in my leagues. I don't have the first pick in any leagues. But
do you think Breece over Willis?
Unless Willis gets top 10 capital, I think so. Or if like Hall has like something detrimental happen. So I mean, if Willis goes 2 or 6, then I think it's hard to not value him that highly, just objectively, especially with the running ability, because it means that he would start way sooner than anyone is expecting by almost necessity, right? Like, those teams won't be good enough for him not to start. But if he goes to like the Steelers at pick 20, you know, they could be potentially like roadblock him just in terms of like hanging around, because it's all about when these guys play, it's going to be all dictated by record, this class especially, when they get pressure from the organization to have to play, right? Like, you know, if you're on the Steelers and they're 5-5, he might not be playing still, right? But if he's on the Panthers and they're 2-8, like, he's sure as hell going to be in. Like, there's no way he won't be. So it's kind of one of those things I kind of wanted to see where the draft capital is. And you hinted on the draft we did, and I'm in another one too. And the same thing, everyone's just a little gun shy on the quarterbacks because of the chasm of where these guys could go, right? As high as pick 2, the end of round 1, some guys projected in the first round, some might fall like into the top of the second round. It's just kind of scattershot. And in these early pre-draft rookie drafts, which I still believe is the best way to do this because of stuff like this, it forces people to kind of make a decision. Yeah, you see people being a little more gun shy on the quarterbacks, but if we get a couple of these guys, 2 or 3 guys at first round draft capital, those guys will climb with Willis, because Willis is still up there anyways. But Burks and Jameson Williams, the two guys I'm trying to get the most. I'm really hoping that the situation, that the events that have played out for Burks have helped him in the actual NFL draft. Because
chances of getting to the Cowboys, Packers, or Chiefs.
Yeah, you got the Cardinals down there. You got the Bills down there. All these teams that have good quarterbacks, good offenses that can insulate production for a player right away. Whereas one of these guys that we talked about is going to go to the Jets at 10. One of these guys is going to go to the Eagles with one of their first two picks, and then we'll see where the other guys go. But like, to me, the Jets and Eagles are like horrific landing spots. And, you know, I'm open and have some fluidity and not penalize guys too heavily for where they go. But like, we know like what kind of offense the Eagles are going to run. Like, we absolutely 100% know. Now, they might be able to move on for Jalen Hurts in a year. That's fine. And then, you know, with the Jets, you know, you have a guy who I believe is a supreme talent already in Elijah Moore. And we have a quarterback that had one of the worst objective, you know, quarterback seasons we've ever seen from a rookie quarterback, even in a year where there was a bunch of bad quarterback play from rookies. Zach Wilson, and it really takes a lot of squint to see it, like hope and pray now at this point, to just hope he could be a baseline quarterback. So two of those guys are going to go to those two spots. And when we're talking about breaking tiebreakers and tiers, like, that's where landing spot might impact some rookie drafts. But on the flip side of that, we might see all 5 of those guys we talked about as the top 5 receivers in the class all be selected before even that pick 22 spot that we kind of talked about, like that, where it starts to be like Packers twice, Chiefs twice, Bills, Cardinals, Cowboys. And then do one of those teams elevate another receiver that maybe 100%, doesn't?
That's what I think is the most interesting thing about the rookie draft that we just did, which is that one of these picks that went in the second round, Christian Watson, Sky Moore, Dotson, et cetera, et cetera. The
Pickens, all those guys.
One of those guys is going to get the, I always think of it as the Mecole Hardman bump, where if I remember right, in our rookie draft, I think he went in the late 3rd round of this league. And then, you know, obviously when draft time came around, he was like, I think he was like the 107, 108 on average. And one of these guys is going to get that. And it could be, I mean, it could be a left field guy, right? If could be John Mechie, right? You know, I mean, there are lots of guys, because it just, at that point, it comes down to
Sky Moore,
team archetype and what the team wants out of that pick. It could just be so many guys.
I could see Sky Moore, because like, he's gotten so much steam, and like, he sneaks into the back end of the first just based on default of like all the wide receivers going. And then in your rookie drafts, he's probably going to climb to like, be like, you know, especially in your non-superflex leagues, he might even jump one of those receivers we talked about, you know?
I think that's accurate. And so my question is, this is like a, this is again a total like metaverse wrinkle, but like, let's say the Packers or the Chiefs or the Bills, probably not the Bills, they probably don't have the ammo, but the Packers or the Chiefs have the ammo to do it, and they trade up and they get inside the top 10 for a wide receiver. I mean, can that guy go over Breece Hall, assuming that Breece Hall is a second round pick?
Yeah, potentially. I mean, Breece Hall is another one of those guys that we love the three down running back, especially for they represent for fantasy. So, I mean, but if he goes like somehow falls to like the 50s or something, and like we have to wait, and you know, you got all these guys with just supreme capital, I mean, that's going to like weigh into people's decisions. I've always been like wide receivers in startups, running backs and rookie drafts because of the, you know, the hit the ground running kind of development. Yeah. And, you know, we'll see that the impact that Jamar Chase and Justin Jefferson have had on rookies too the past couple of years, right? Like that's going to be a thing people are going to be aggressive on, especially when we get to August and the actual rookie drafts come around. Like I bet we see some of these rookies even be aggressively taken in redraft leagues because of the performances that those two players have had on the last two seasons. So that's gonna be something to watch too.
I mean, we saw that last year with rookie wide receivers, you know, got mm-hmm. second round NFL draft picks were ninth round, you know, Jalen Waddle, Elijah Moore. Waddle ended up being a really good pick. Elijah Moore, yes. Not so much. I mean, I believe Waddle finished as the wide receiver 12 in PPR last year, which is pretty insane. But I mean, the old thinking that rookie wide receivers are not going to start from week one is gone. I mean, if wide receivers yeah. drafted in the first round, they're starting for their team like 100%.
Yeah, especially in this class of where these guys are going to go. So I'm excited to see. Like, I kind of just like want to just know, right? Like, I just want to know, like, where, what's the shakeup? What's the landscape look like? I really want to know for like the tier we said, because we know that those five players are probably going to get drafted highly regardless. Like the floor for like say even Burks, if he's the fifth guy, is probably like 24 or something. Mm-hmm. I want to see the rest. Like does that impact all these other guys getting elevated, especially paired with what the NFL has done this offseason with wide receivers and generally the wide receiver landscape in terms
yeah,
of
a wide receiver contracts. on a rookie contract is a huge bargain right now because of these guys are demanding so much money, and it's only going to get more expensive because when Jamar Chase and Justin Jefferson, when their rookie yep. contracts are up, I mean, is Jamar Chase going to be the highest paid non-quarterback of all time up in when he signs his contract? I think so.
Yeah. I mean, well, Justin Jefferson might, when he's up after this year, cause they can renegotiate with him after this year, even though they have two more rights or two more years of rights with him because the fifth year option. And then they got some franchise tag ons, but you can bet your damn fucking bottom dollar that Jamar Chase's or Justin Jefferson's camp is going to be pushing for that contract extension immediately after year three, like 100%. Like that's absolutely going to happen. So yeah, I mean, and the fifth year option actually matters a lot more now for wide receivers than it does for quarterbacks now that it's fully guaranteed.
Yeah.
I've been talking about this on some shows too, because you look at like how the landscape has played out, you know, Daniel Jones is fifth year option. We're going to see the Giants probably not pick that up because now that it's fully guaranteed, it's $22.4 million. Like you're not going to be able to, it's not a leverage spot anymore where you can freeze a guy, see how he does. It's not like that. Kyler right now, who's made a Pro Bowl, his fifth year option, which the Cardinals are going to have to pick up just based on default, because they can't let him try to walk with these negotiations kind of hitting like kind of a stonewall. It's $29.7 million, which is the exact same as the franchise tag. So there's no more, the fifth year option does not carry as much leverage that it once did for the quarterbacks. You know, so it's going to be interesting to see how teams impact that, especially paired with this quarterback class, because this would be like a quarterback class where you look at like the way the landscape was a couple of years ago and you'd say, yeah,
trade up to 32
Desmond Ridder at pick 30 or whatever, because we have a fifth year option, we can play with that. But now it's not a luxury, it's not a luxury item anymore.
Yeah, which is that will be interesting with the teams that are picking at the back end of the first round to see if anyone does want to try and trade up. Like it would have the thing when it, before it was fully guaranteed, was you trade, I mean, do what the Ravens did with Lamar, right? You trade up to 32 to get that fifth year option.
And he was the same way.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, you're probably not wanting to do that for Sam Howell or Desmond Ridder or
Matt
whoever.
Corral. Like it's tough, yeah. Man. It's tough. It's tough to say that. Yeah. So yeah, those teams that might have those picks that we talked about, they might have really wanted a wide receiver. Now, a lot of those teams that we talked about too, also need help elsewhere. You know, if the wide receivers end up being elevated, it's going to push some of these, like, it's a pretty good defensive back class by all accounts out in the public out there. I don't really have a lot of defensive back takes in terms of grinding the film and doing research on these guys, but you know, you look at teams like the Bills, the Chiefs, like all those teams need like defensive back help too. And so they could push good players down to them as well.
So who, getting a little bit later into the draft, you know, third round, fourth round, who are some of the guys that are drawing the eye of Reeves? Who are you trying to come away with?
Yeah, so it's interesting. I was on, a podcast where we were, talking about like how rookie drafts, like it's just optimal to take running backs with your third and fourth round rookie picks, like over wide receivers, because those guys can run into more pockets of production that impact fantasy than the wide receivers. Like yeah. you can hit some home runs. We've particularly had some great wide receiver hits in this draft that we do. I think Gabriel Davis was the final pick of one draft year, Deontay Johnson. The final draft pick another year. But for the most part, when you look at your typical rookie drafts, they're going to play out in the general public, like asking your third and fourth round receivers to like make an impact is a really long road. And it's really a long road for immediate production because those guys, even with injuries, don't tend to get elevated, but your Khalil Herberts and guys like that can run into two or three or four week stretches in a given season, even as rookies, and produce and help you be in your starting lineup and help you win kind of weeks. Whereas like, a guy like you want to take your flyer on your day three wide receiver, like Seth Williams or some goon, like that dude probably is not going to make it. Like he's probably not going to make it. And not these running backs might not make it either, but they have a lot more.
And you'll know though, that's the hidden value of the running back is like Benny Snell, right? You can just cut that guy, right? You can just move on from Benny Snell, right? Or, the Chargers guy, Larry Roundtree, right? Done. Yep. Out of here. Gone. Like you can just send him back to the waivers. No problem. But if you're holding on to Amari Rodgers, right? Packers guy, like you might not be able to cut Amari Rodgers right now, who is like he's very likely to be dead weight, but you can't cut him.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think when you look at these like running backs, like obviously, these guys will have to get kind of the capital we're hoping for. But, I mean, that's what I'm looking for is these running backs that are going to slide just because the receivers are going to carry the draft capital in rookie drafts. So, I mean, I don't think – I mean, we're doing early drafts now. Zamir White's been a third-round pick in every draft I've done so far that's pre-draft. So, I mean, looking to grab him. I don't think Rashad White's going to get the draft capital we all kind of want. But, you know, if he gets a, favorable landing spot, like that will help. But, like, any of these guys, Damien Pierce – James Cook, you want to go down the row. I mean, I really like kind of Keontae Ingram, Pierre Strong, just all these types of guys. Like this is, you want to draft those guys though, over the, whether you're coming in draft and you like a Calvin Austin or a Justin Ross or a Tyquan Thornton or Bo Melton, Danny Gray, Velus Jones. Like those are the guys, like if they're probably going to get taken on day three, not really have like a lot of, path to be fantasy relevant players. The road's going to be working against them, but these running backs, even if it's for a 2 week stretch in a season, could be elevated and help you win a fantasy game. And they just, I just want to use my picks on running backs at that point.
Yeah. And like tight ends are not doing that. They're not like, you got to hold those guys. Like has Cole Kmet helped you win a fantasy game yet? Probably not.
And granted, you do run into some guys, but it's Hunter Renfrow has been like one of those examples. Like you do, but like who in the draft is like banging on their door to like, oh yeah, I'm going to smash Hunter Renfrow in the third round every draft. Like that didn't happen.
Wandale is the guy to me who could do it if the right team takes him and uses him in a similar role, but he's really small and it's much more likely that he ends up going the way of Andy Isabella fancy Dexter McCluster or whatever. Like that's a far more, or even Isaiah McKenzie, right? Like where they're useful NFL players, but the coaches never treat them in such a way that they get enough touches to be valuable for fantasy.
Even last year, if you brick, like Chuba Hubbard is objectively a bad football player, but if you took him in the second round or third round of your rookie draft, like he helped you at least. He helped you.
He did.
Even if you traded him, if you did anything, like he just provided different kind of flexibility. Elijah Mitchell obviously is like the ceiling, the pantheon of that. But like dudes were taking like Anthony Schwartz and like Tutu Atwell and Hunter Long and Tylan Wallace. Like these guys aren't going to help you, man. They're just not, like the odds of them helping you just are so small.
It's actually much more likely that you run into even a quarterback in these super flex leagues getting spot starts than the wide receivers helping you. Like, I don't know, even if Sam Howell is a third round pick, he still probably starts a couple games this year just for whatever team takes him to see, like, you know, if the Saints take him in the third round or whatever, like he still probably gets a couple games.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, Jalen Darden was one of those guys too. Like,
yep.
You know, you hold a candle for these wide receivers that you kind of like throughout the process, but like the path that they have is so small. Whereas a running back, like sometimes you just have to give the football to guys, right? In a given week. And we saw it like Khalil Herbert, right? It was like that. And it's just the situation plays out for these guys a lot more than these wide receivers because they have to leapfrog so many guys on the depth chart. And an injury doesn't even necessarily equate the value for those guys.
Yeah. Brian Robinson is the name I keep coming back to for these running backs. Not that is, not that he's anything special. Not that I think he's very talented. Not that I think he's this great pass catcher. It's just like, I've seen this movie play out with SEC running backs before where some coach gets a hard on for him. He goes in the second round. He's on a depth chart where he's at least allowed to be competitive. And he ends up starting four games and holding on for the entirety of his rookie contract. Like I know this movie can play out for him, even despite the fact that he's really nothing special.
Yeah, I mean, he's got the size too. I mean, he's the second largest running back in his draft class. So I think if people are looking for that type of player, like I fully believe the Chargers are looking for that type of player, right? Like that complement to Austin Ekeler, like Josh Kelly hasn't been good 2 years in the NFL. You already brought Larry Roundtree not hitting. Justin Jackson is still remains a free agent. I think they're looking for that guy, that 220 plus pound running back to alleviate Austin Ekeler like banger touches. So like Brian Robinson is a guy they could be looking at, you know, like Jerome Ford, maybe even if they wait till later, like Hassan Haskins, like those big guys. But yeah, Brian Robinson is totally one of those guys that an NFL roster already knows they can give him a bunch of touches and he's not going to like just kill them, right? Like he's to be serviceable with those touches as a baseline, right? But he can force missed tackles. He can catch the football. So I definitely believe he'll be drafted higher than maybe like a lot of objective models suggest he should be. After the top two running backs in this class, Breece Hall and Kenneth Walker, the RB3 could be anybody. We've talked about the QB3 being anybody. The RB3 could be anybody too in this class.
Yeah, no, that's actually a great point. Is it could literally be anyone. Could be Spiller, could be Pierce, could be, I mean, probably not Rashad White, probably not going to get the draft capital. But if any of these guys ends James Cook, if any of them ends up as a second round pick, you can pretty much write them in as the third running back of the class. Like, it could be Tyler Allgeier, it could be Keyonte Ingram. It just totally depends on what the NFL decision makers decide to do.
Right.
Wonder if the Chiefs are a sneaky team to take a running back, by the way, because McKinnon and Darrell Williams have not re-signed their contracts and it's just Rojo and CEH. And, you know, Rojo is like the worst pass blocking running back in the league. And
Tyler Slayer is also bad at it.
Yeah. And well, he's just not good in general. So I do wonder if I do just wonder if the Chiefs are a sneaky, the Bills too. The Bills are,
we write up all the teams going into the draft. Me and Dan Pizzuta, I write up offense. He writes defense. I just submitted the Chiefs today. The only running back they have under contract beyond the season is CEH right now, but I kind of penciled them in like with the way their roster is, like they probably would benefit more from another veteran signing after the draft than the, you know, probably another rookie. But there are a team I could see them use a day 3 pick on though at the position to add to the depth because like you mentioned the depth chart is just CH and Ronald Jones, and Ronald Jones only got a 1 year $1.5 million. He's the only guy, CH is the only guy under contract beyond the season. So that's a spot too. And they have a bunch of draft picks too.
Yeah.
They have like 4 round 7 picks.
There, I mean, hey. It's gonna make someone interesting for us, right? Like probably there's just one of those guys that's gonna end up on one of these. What do you think the Cowboys?
I will not
do?
Be talked into Clyde Edwards-Helaire this offseason, by the way.
I will. I already. What's he going? He's going in like the 8th round in these early drafts. It's like what am I gonna do with that? Like you can't get even on the Martingale if you stop at the cheapest price.
I cannot not take Kadarius Toney though over. Like, I'm not going to take Clyde Edwards-Helaire over Kadarius Toney.
I'm going to have to. I'm going to be the market is forcing me. Now, if he was going in the 6th round, I could pass at that. But I'm not going to be able to, I'm not going to be able to not build a portfolio full of CH and Ronald Jones teams. It is not sensical for the Chiefs to have for whoever the Chiefs running back is valuable for fantasy when they're getting the touches. Like Darrell Williams
all
is
the touches most, though.
Well, in best ball, you don't have to decide though. Like it's a different thing. It's a different thing.
But it still has only mattered when like the guy is getting all the touches. So far, Clyde Edwards-Helaire through two NFL seasons has run 55 total pass routes on third down.
That's so bad.
Like doesn't he have to be that back for the roster right now? Because it's given. Like
there is a 0% chance they get to the season without adding a veteran, right? And they might just decide to bring McKinnon back. He's not on the team right now, but they might just decide to bring him back.
Darrell hasn't signed with anyone either yet.
And Giovanni Bernard is a free agent, by the way. They love to bring in these guys for the last season of their career. They brought in LeSean McCoy. They brought in Le'Veon Bell.
That's why I wrote it up as like, I thought they would go the veteran route because of the pass protection angle. When you look at how they've used Clyde Edwards-Helaire, the biggest thing that's thwarted him is that he doesn't play in passing situations even when they're in a timeshare, and they're not going to ask a rookie to do that. Right. And they're not going to ask Ron John to do it.
No, they'll probably just ask if it seems impossible that they don't add a veteran. I kind of thought it was going to be Fournette for a little bit there. Like it kind of sounded like I'm glad that it ended up being Rojo. I mean, Rojo right now, assuming he's like a 13th, 14th round pick, I don't care how bad you think Ronald Jones is, like that is just, that's picking up nickels on the street at that cost. Like it just is.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how this, like I said, plays out for CEH, because Ronald Jones is a direct like threat to goal line work and early down work. And CEH is already, when you look at his rushing yards below expectation, has really struggled his first 2 years in the NFL. And then we kind of like walk through the scenario that like they're probably going to add a guy to fill the passing
to play on passing downs.
Extends it. So like, where do we fall here? Like what happens? So.
Well, I mean, I think Rojo and CH will probably be in a legitimate competition, and whichever one of them plays better is going to get more time. That's what I would think.
That's crazy.
And they're going to bring in a Giovanni Bernard, LeSean McCoy. Like who are the remaining free agents right now? Running back, NFL free agents.
Melvin Gordon is the only one.
Melvin Gordon is a free agent. Kind of surprised that they didn't reach out to Damian. David Johnson is available.
Oh, there's a Chiefs guy.
Yeah. Jalen.
He's just cooked though.
Jalen Richard is available.
There you go. Yep. Same.
Carlos Hyde, who they've already done once, is available. They literally have already done that. They already brought Carlos Hyde in once. It's Malcolm Brown. I already solved it. It's Malcolm Brown. That's who they're signing. Yeah. So just be ready. I mean, the point is, looking through the running back free agents, there are plenty of dusty pass blockers for them.
And those guys will all sign after the draft with teams.
Yeah. I mean, it could be any of these guys. Could be Justin Jackson, could be Jerick McKinnon. They could just bring Jerick or Darrell Williams back. So there are plenty of ways for that to go.
Because that's where we are in free agency right now, is that we're at teams that are basically at like the post-draft standstill. Well, you know, we've seen it with like Jarvis Landry. You know, everyone just kind of waiting to see where the roster looks like coming out of the draft.
What do you think happens with Julio, Landry, and Fuller? Those are like the three names that are still really interesting out there for fantasy.
Yeah, I'm not really sure like how healthy Fuller is, because remember in like February he tweeted a picture of like his finger.
Yeah, Crane was telling me that he had to have another surgery on his finger.
Yeah, so I don't know like how teams, and last year, even coming off of the best year of his career, he only got the one year deal, so he's probably gonna have to do that again. You know, Landry's one of those guys like fully, like a team just really is waiting to see what their roster looks like, right? Like no one's rushing out to, he's like a reliable player that they can plug in, but like he's been like pretty subpar the last like four seasons. It's pretty average player, so you know what you're getting. So not too much excitement. Julio is just there, man. It sucks we're here with Julio, but everyone dies. It's a bummer.
I want Julio to sign with the Buccaneers, because I think
it's probably going to happen. That makes the most sense.
And they could reset. It could, like, I think that could resuscitate him a little bit. You know, just because
Godwin's not going to, Godwin's probably going to be on the PUP. He's going to start the year.
And he's going to be able to play with other guys who are better than him, which I think is important. Like, yes. Yeah, like playing with Mike Evans. And
well,
and
then you just want him to, at this point, if you're going to resuscitate anything, he needs to go the AJ Green route where he's on a team that also is just going to throw. Like, they're going to throw the football. Like, Julio, what sucked about him is he got double whammy because he did this typical Julio season where he missed a bunch of times, had a hamstring injury that lingered throughout the course of the season, but then also was in the Tennessee Titans offense construct.
That just never threw. Yeah.
So there was never – so he had no way to, like, just, like, breathe any type of life into, like, his game. Whereas here, you know, if it's, say here is the Buccaneers are going – like, he could be a part-time player, but he's on a team that's going to throw out. And, like, A.J. Green, right? Like, A.J. Green wasn't necessarily incredible last year, but, like, he contributed and was a really good, like, football player because he was on the right – he went to the right situation.
Yeah. And I mean, the A.J. Green stuff does give you a little bit of hope for Julio, too, because A.J. Green, his last season in Cincinnati, looked beyond cooked and did resuscitate himself a little bit in Arizona. So –
you know, I was surprised they signed him before the draft, but I think that they just had so many holes that they just had to bring it back.
Yeah. I mean, there were Antoine Wesley was looking like he was starting week one for them, which what you got any hope for Rondale? You got any hopium to sell me for Rondale Moore?
I mean, he's just never not like that type of player is just not my kind of player. So like, I'm just not that excited. There's always going to be someone in my leagues that is going to believe a lot more than me, just like they did in rookie drafts. It's the same thing with Wandell, right?
It's like, probably me. I'm probably the guy.
I mean, I just, that type of player is just never going to be, but maybe it's a blind spot and I'm not, you know, adjusting quickly enough to where the NFL is headed, but I just, that type of player just does nothing for me.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's fair. You got any tight end takes? Any of these guys interesting to you? And any Jelani Woods? You big Jelani Woods guy?
I love Dulcich, man. Dulcich is my dude.
Yeah, yeah. I did see in your rankings you have Dulcich over Trey McBride.
I do. I think he provides a lot more verticality to an offense. So if he ends in the right spot, I think that he's a guy that could be. You know, if he ends up with anywhere with like similar targets, like it's he could be better. So I'm big on Dulcich, man, a lot. I mean, think about this. So all players in this draft class, all players, not just tight ends, he's fourth in rate of throws on targets 20 or more yards downfield. And you know, it's just crazy, man. Like he's a guy that provides a lot of like upside in terms of upside targets. And if he would have played with like a good quarterback, his numbers would be awesome. And if he would have played anywhere in like an offense that he had to get thrown to, like Trey McBride did at Colorado State, like his numbers have been insane too. So I'm gonna believe McBride is one of those guys, like he's not gonna go in the first round of the real NFL draft. So like I think it's kind of egregious to use a first round rookie pick on him.
Yeah, I mean it sounds like he's gonna go to the Jets at 38. Is a very common mock draft spot I see. The other thing you mentioned earlier about having to just like hope and pray that Zach Wilson can become a league average quarterback. Don't we feel that way about every quarterback from last year's class, that none of them displayed absolutely league average play?
Well, Mac is like a functional real life quarterback.
Yes.
Like, so like he's the guy, and we don't know what Lance is.
But he's a functional real life quarterback the way Baker Mayfield is a functional real life quarterback.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, he can actually throw at least. So, I mean, we're at least
I am so sick of this. Like, we have all, the hate has gone way too far on Baker. Like, Baker,
for sure. Absolutely.
Baker, when he's healthy, is fine.
But it has nothing to do with like, so we're way beyond the point of like Baker's play impacting anything. Like, people have like, people were tired of the progressive commercials, right? Like, people don't like the way he plays because he plays like one of those guys. He's a little bit cocky. Like, so the court of public opinion, like, has always been kind of anti-Baker anyways. I feel like that's just way more. I mean, to me, an NFL team is more willing to start Drew Lock than Baker. Like, how do the Seahawks not want Baker Mayfield, especially where they are in the stage of, like are they in a full rebuild? Do they know yet? Like, why not take Baker Mayfield on? Like, why would he get to play with functional wide receivers?
Because they like Drew Lock, bro. Haven't you been listening? Man. They like Drew Lock.
I mean, yeah. I mean, he can be fine in Carolina too, but like Carolina has just bungled this thing so bad that I don't want to give them any more outs. They all deserve to just die a fiery death. Like Matt Rhule doesn't deserve any outs.
Yeah, no, he really doesn't. Are you worried that the Bears are just giving up on Fields? That they're just like, yeah, we tried it. It didn't work. Let's get him out of here.
No, I think that this regime just got boned, man. I think that the Bears stuck with their previous regime 1 year too long. And with Nagy and Ryan Pace forced into like a desperation mode, it made this a year zero for this regime. They don't even get a year one. Like, this is a year zero. This is a year where they need to recoup assets. They enter the draft. They take over a team that doesn't have a first round draft pick. One of the worst offensive lines in the league, one of the worst wide receiver situations in the league. It's just kind of, they got boned, man. It's literally a year zero for this regime. And it sucks because it's for Fields, because it's going to put him a little bit more behind the eight ball. And then now, because when you have one bad year, we say, all right, well, we're willing to give you another look. Right.
But two,
now when you start to have two, we start to be like, oh shit, not everyone's Josh Allen, man.
Yeah. Yeah. And they just haven't done anything for him. I mean, his wide receivers are Byron Pringle and Darnell Mooney and Cole Kmet. And that's
Equanimeous St. Brown.
Yeah. It's like they
they don't have a first round pick. They had two twos who they'll probably use one on a wide receiver, but their offensive line is the right side, especially because they lost their best offensive lineman from a year ago, their right guard.
It's so bad.
It's just tough, man. This regime was put in a tough spot. Plus, the thing with Fields too is that the offensive insulation from a coach down is not very strong, right? Like, they hired a defensive coach. It's one of these situations that just isn't glowing on the surface. But Fields was in a similarly terrible situation end last year, and he did have four QB1 weeks in his final five starts.
Well, he finally started to scramble a bit.
It was all running, basically. So, I mean, you're just getting him to run around.
But he can run. Like, that. Okay, like,
he's
like
a legitimately good runner.
Like, he's just, like, a really good runner. And you know, I mean, I saw both sides of this coin. Like, you know, the Fields apologists, like, you know, me and Gretch, and we're like, you know, Nagy's not designing anything for him. And then you have, like, big NFL who was out on Fields to begin with. They were like, actually, Nagy is designing all this stuff, and Fields isn't just making the throws. And it's like, I don't really know who to believe.
That's what makes CJ Stroud so interesting, because he's basically regarded as the top quarterback. But this Ohio State system, like, does not let these guys develop a quick game, because they have so many awesome wide receivers, and everyone else in the Big Ten is still playing a different brand of football than they are.
Yep.
And they're throwing, I mean, every Ohio State game from the past decade, basically, since this is all shifted, since Herb took over, and they've gone through just like this, just awesome run of just recruiting like awesome quarterbacks, wide receivers, but every dude is just pushing the ball 20 yards down the field, and they just have no quick game. So I'm curious to see even what happens with Stroud. Cause that was Fields is like big knock. Everyone even knocked it, even the process. They're like, well, he's going to have to develop all these things, you know, in the short game. And that was a big thing that got highlighted in year one in the NFL, was that his quick game was trash. And it was a big problem at the NFL level.
So, isn't the Alabama quarterback is not the number one guy for next year? Bryce Young is not considered the number one.
I mean, Stroud. I see Stroud, but those are the two guys you see at the top.
I would smash the Bryce Young button right now. He seems unreal. Like, are we already approaching like the meme, like next year's quarterback class is the class, right? Like I think
a lot of people are still kind of down on it after the top, right? Like, I don't know enough. I'm not,
I mean, yeah, I don't know shit outside of those two guys.
Yeah. But I think it's like just kind of, so it's better than this, but still is more top heavy at the time. But you never know when these guys are going to pop out. Cause you know, you had Zach Wilson raise his stock so heavily his last year. If Kenny Pickett, if COVID doesn't happen, is Kenny Pickett even drafted?
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah, probably not.
I mean,
he's like the, you know, the Carson Strong memorial. Like, Carson Strong is going to be like a fifth round pick this year. They'll be the same thing for
Yeah, Carson Strong just missed the boat. Like in 1985, Carson Strong would have been like an amazing draft pick.
Amazing, yeah.
And if he had knees, it would have been there. He's actually, he can wing it now. As far as like throwers go in this class, like Carson Strong probably is the best actual quarterback.
Yep, he can whip it, dude. It's just, you just can't have that as your quarterback anymore. Your quarterback's got to be able to move.
It's too antiquated. The game is, you can't do it anymore. And he's coming with the knee injury too. It's not even that he can't move. He's also coming with the significant injury risk.
Do you think that the Saints are going to take a quarterback, or do you think they're just rolling with the Jameis Simeon group?
I don't, but if they do, I think it'll be the dumbest thing I've ever seen the team organization handle getting a quarterback, because you try to get Watson, which is fine. We know the level, at least talent Watson is, if you're going to sell out, like whatever, and we have to bring the peripheral stuff into it. We get why the team wanted him. But then you bring Jameis back after that strikes out, but then you forfeit a compensatory pick to sign Andy Dalton before the draft.
Oh, so like, unbelievable.
Then you make this trade up, which looks like they got dominated by all accounts on every single trade thing I've ever seen, like every single trade value chart. And then you're going to do that to still take a mid-team quarterback and not even like a top. Like it doesn't add up to me, even for Mickey Loomis, and he does some wild stuff. And like, it just doesn't add up to me. But the Saints, one thing they've always shown us though under Mickey Loomis is they are the kings of trading up for like non-quarterbacks. Like they don't care. So maybe they're trying to get a wide receiver. Maybe they're trying to get a tackle. I don't know.
And it's also dip. Like the infrastructure is so different from if they would have done this like 3 years ago to prepare for Breeze leaving. It's like, you know, they have this amazing roster and all these good offensive players. And now like Alvin Kamara might be suspended. Michael Thomas hasn't played in 2 years. It's a different head coach. The offensive line is still good, right?
No, it's been, I mean, they lost. I mean, well,
you know, they lost our Armstead. Yeah.
And then you've got, you know, what Caesar is in the final year, his contract. It's getting there. And they were crushed. They were the offensive line that was the most injured of all of last year, which played a large role into what happened over the course of their season outside of having to play Taysom Hill.
Yeah. So what can we do?
I mean, the Taysom Hill thing's amazing. He's already like the 10th highest paid tight end.
And he's not even really a tight. It's not like you can throw him the ball 80 times a year, you know, like it's so like
good.
The idea of Taysom Hill having to no longer being in the quarterback room for the meetings is like hilarious to me. It's like, all right, I'm going to go hang out with Troutman and Juwan Johnson, and I'm making $17 million a year. What's up, dudes?
But the Saints do things a lot differently. I mean, I will not.
It's true.
It's just weird. If they did all this to take a quarterback, like when you run everything down, every single domino in order, it just looks egregious if that's the come out. But yeah. You know, then the QB thirst is real though. And you know, teams can't help themselves. We need a quarterback.
Yeah. I hope
starting Ian Book again.
No, you can't. I mean, I just hope that this ends up being an absolutely all time insane draft for wide receivers in the first round, because that investment in the wide receivers is going to save the rookie drafts. Like there could, and I've been saying this on shows, but you know, so many teams need a wide receiver because most teams base personnel is 11 now. And what team doesn't need a third wide receiver? Like the Bengals. That's it. They're the only team that doesn't need a third wide receiver, or couldn't have a third wide receiver improve their offense.
And even they like are probably going to take a day three wide receiver because
they don't have a fourth guy.
Because they don't have a fourth guy, and they live in 11 personnel because of, you know, Zach Taylor's lineage. Like, so if Tyler Boyd was to get hurt, or T. Higgins or Jamar Chase were to get hurt, now you're elevating Mike Thomas and like to being relied upon your base offense. So I even believe they'll add a day three guy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing. What else? Is anything else really interesting to you right now in these streets?
Now we're mostly in like kind of like the wait and see mode, like where guys go, what kind of capital guys get. I'm in my third pre-draft NFL draft, and like, so it's kind of fun. I still believe if you're playing Dynasty, those are the best ways to draft, because you get the non-hall pass picks, right?
You know? Yep.
So I love that. When Heen Butler goes 105 in our draft before the draft, but he goes amazing. The fourth round,
yeah.
You're stuck. You're stuck, man. You don't get the free pass for everyone to rescind their takes. So I do think it's the best way to play. Plus you end up with it makes the end of the draft, I think, matter a lot more too, because we don't know the capital on these guys. We had joked about, not joked or just talked about how Deontay Johnson was the last pick of our rookie draft that year, but he goes and gets drafted with significant third round capital. Right? Yeah, by the Steelers, and he climbs. He's no longer, you're no longer can get him there at that spot. So in these pre-draft drafts, those fourth round picks and those late thirds, like they've become kind of really good picks too. Like a lot of guys get elevation out of that area because when we get to the draft and see draft capital, those guys don't get the rise. You know, you don't get the you get them at their lowest point. So it's still the best way to play and do dynasty.
I mean, you got one of the best ones. You took Clyde Edwards-Helaire at the 110.
We thought so.
Well, I probably tried to trade for him back then. After you got him, I probably sent you some egregious deal where I was, you know, way overpaying for Clyde at the time. And I messaged you the other day about trading for him because I don't have any running backs in this league. I have more wide receivers than I could ever start, but I don't have any running backs. So I kind of need someone like Clyde Edwards-Helaire to stop the gaps, really.
Yeah. And, you know, I still see, like, you know, even when we walk through that Clyde Edwards-Helaire scenario, I just want to give him away either, though. It's one of these things that's always tough, especially running backs in general, you know, just because, my team's in like a win now team anyways. I was in the championship last year. So like the giveaway running backs and win now teams is always.
What did you think of the 101 for AJ Brown in that league?
Oh yeah, I dig it. Yeah, I mean I love it. I love AJ Brown. You get Arthur Juan on as many rosters as possible.
Don't love that he's already holding out. But you know whatever they have no choice. Especially in this class
because in ours, Breece Hall actually didn't go one. Willis did go one. Yeah. And Willis is such a question mark. I mean, this dude could be incredible or like, but he's such a project. I mean his accuracy stats are such take such a projection for him to translate in the NFL, and we don't know where draft capital is going to be. And then his other thing on top of it is like he's terrible at taking sacks, which we've shown has been detrimental.
But he got way better year over year, right?
Yeah, well no, last year he took a step back. Like he was everything he was better at was his in 2020-2021 was just sank his accuracy, his pocket presence, his turnovers, everything kind of just really hurt him last year. And the offensive line is trash, but a lot was still on him. So I mean he's still a dicey like pre-draft 101 rookie pick though, because now if he ends up going even pick 20, like is he the 101? Probably not, right? Like, and if Breece Hall goes to the Bills or some team where he's got a runway to be,
dude, I would so take the under on that. There's just too much smoke, and he is the type of guy that is like worth getting fired for if you're a GM. I think, yeah.
I mean, even when I say that, the risk, like, he is the one guy when we talk about all these quarterbacks that still has that range of outcomes.
Yeah,
the spades that he has can overcome the poor things he does. Whereas you look at the rest of this class. And you're like, well, all right, well, if Kenny Pickett doesn't hit his ceiling, how is he helping you? How is Sam Howell helping you if he brings all these red flags in, right? Like,
yeah.
Malik Willis still has those spades to say, like, oh, he doesn't have to be a perfect quarterback, right, to make your offense work. Whereas these other guys still take a lot of projection in that way. So, yeah, I'm with you. I mean, the rest of these quarterbacks are kind of up. I mean, we took – you said Willis is the only guy that went in the first round for ours. I took Kenny Pickett at 203, and I only took him basically just on positional value. Like I took
Ritter and Howell.
Yeah, just at that point though, you do it. But even when we get into the actual NFL draft, when one of these guys is being a first rounder, because I believe at least one will, and maybe two, then you'll see those guys climb up and kind of go where that wall, that tier cuts off, right? Like the Jahan Dotson area. Yep. Those guys will move right back up to that.
Unless Dahan Johnson goes to the Chiefs.
Yeah. Well, he's like the kind of the firewall, right? Like,
yeah.
And then after that, like Pickens is probably going to have to get like a lot more draft capital, and he could, but that's kind of where you are.
Dude, I love George Pickens. I mean,
George Pickens is like the throwback kind of guy that we talked about, like we would typically fall in love with. So when they're discounted, we like him. I like George Pickens because I have like a motto in fantasy and dynasty that like anybody that was like a supremely high like Devy guy and they end up being discounted in the rookie draft, like I just like to get those guys. Like Juju, Justin Herbert, like those guys that maybe don't hit the Cortland Sutton was one of those guys that hasn't fully worked out yet. But like when those guys that were just like Devy, like top three, top four Devy picks, and by the time they come out, like they kind of fall like the end of round one, high round two, like I just want to gobble those guys up because I know that the pedigree was there and it was there for Pickens. I mean, he had a phenomenal age 18 season, just has been hurt. And even when he got to come back and play last year, I mean, Georgia had no reason to try to throw the football downfield. Like, right. They didn't give a shit. Like, their defense wasn't giving up any points at all, and their running backs were awesome. So, like, they were never even trying to really put the ball in the air. So,
and they had that insane 5-star tight end.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's one of those things, like, Pickens just kind of got snake bit with the way things played out. Justin Ross will be the one gray area, dude, because he has, like, the medicals. He had the early breakout. But, like, it feels like the league isn't into him. Like, just – George Pickens consistently still is regarded as like a high two by everything we see by all counts.
Yeah.
Whereas like Justin Ross, like we don't even know if he's going to go on day two.
Yeah. Yeah. He could be day three undrafted, probably not an undrafted free agent, but could be. Yeah. The medicals seem really bad.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's like the one kind of exception to that process, but like if a team takes Justin Ross on day two, like I could see myself getting coaxed back in if he ends up, but it just really feels like he's not going to even go on day two at all.
Yeah. All right, man. Let's do it. Let's get out of here. What can the people look forward to from Sharp Football Analysis heading up to the draft?
I mean, right now I've just been doing all dynasty stuff this off season. Me and Dan Pizzuta right now are doing all of like the team rosters, like a top down look at all the rosters. You can find all those on there. As I always mentioned, nothing at Sharp Football in the off season is paywalled at all. That's my stuff, you know, any Dan stuff, Ryan McChrystal. We have the top five most accurate mock drafters of the past 5 years that do mock drafts for us, and Brandon Donahue and Ryan McChrystal. All that stuff's available just out on the site. All the tools, all the sharp stats when you used to go to the old sharp stats site, that's all on the new site. You can go mess with all that stuff. It's all out there.
There we go. Everyone, Lord Reeb, Sharp Football Analysis, and we'll be back a little bit later in the week.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisisCLE.com/podcast.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.